Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half of this Thursday get-together, and going to do a quick swap because I promised Joe Clancy 10:30, and Tony said he can wait for us to visit with Joe. And so first post-Breeders' Cup conversation with Joe Clancy. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. It has been a while. And, yeah, I'm impressed with your punctuality, 10:30 on the dot.
Well, that's how. Yeah, that's we're famous. This show, I'm the Mussolini of radio talk shows. We make the train run on time. In fact, that's total bullshit because there is no telling when this train pulls out of the station. This is like the taking of Pelham 123. We could get stuck in the tunnel someplace, and you know. It's a risk. You get on this train, you have no idea where you're going to end up.
Exactly, but that's half the fun.
I'm glad you feel that way because that's how I feel. I haven't talked to you. I mean, other than actually, that's not true. I've talked to you off air and through the magic of texting and the trip you took to the link, and I was stunned, completely stunned, that was your first Eagles game in the new building.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing to say so, but yeah, it never worked out. As the father of three boys, I probably couldn't afford to take all four of them to a game, so we never made it. And then youngest son, Nolan, was home and brought up, hey, these tickets aren't that expensive. We should think about this. So we found a couple on Ticketmaster, I think, or StubHub, whoever, and went to the game. And it is the only game they've lost, so I think I'm banned and I'm never allowed to go back.
Well, that I agree. That probably is smart. It's funny because I was a season ticket holder in the Vet for 14 years, and Section 729. In the last row in section 729.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's way up there.
It was at the top of the stadium. It is one of the best seats in the Vet, the corner of the end zone, and under the overhang. So in the summer, in the late summer, early fall, September games, when it could be 90 degrees, you were in the shade, and everybody else was like, frying an egg on a sidewalk. And then in the winter, when it would start to get nasty, down there off the river, the wind would come over the top of you. You were shielded from the wind. It was the absolute. And then, of course, there's just the wacky hijinks of the 700 section, which was like, you would see things. Well, in fact, I participated in some of those things that you'll never see any at a stadium anywhere else. It was the greatest. When we first started getting those seats, my buddy Phil Melnick and I, and Phil's brother, they're from Wilmington. They pretty much grew up. Well, they grew up in New Orleans too, in Metairie, but they formative years in Wilmington. They were $15 each. $15.
Amazing. Yeah, I had gone to a few games at the Vet. A friend of mine in high school's family had season tickets, and occasionally they trickle down to us anyway, and we'd get to go. And there was a legendary guy. There was Potato Chip Man, and I remember the first time I went to, everybody was freaking out about, where's Potato Chip Man? Where's Potato Chip Man? And I had no idea why anybody was so excited about potato chips. And then the guy shows up with the biggest box of Hers potato chips you've ever seen in your life, sits down, opens the box, and he's got like a case of beer in there. had nothing to do with potato chips.
That's great.
So, you know.
Oh, that
was the vet in a nutshell.
That is great. That the classic. There was no place like it, and it took me a long time to make the conversion over to the link. I just did not want to go, and thank goodness we've accessed through Will Schwartz. Will's got those club level seats, which I mean, compared to the vet, of course, the club level is like it's unbelievable. You think you were in the Bellevue Stratford to watch a game. It's crazy. But Tina loves it too. Tina's come to love it. And you actually, based on the photo you sent, you picked up seats. There's a funny little mezzanine landing that's at the, like, around the 15 yard line, almost maybe even the end zone edge, that is fairly close. And Tina and I have, that's where we're hoping to get season tickets ultimately is in that section. And I think you were basically right there. And when we buy online, that's the section we try to get to.
Yeah. And I think we might've been just above that. We were section 205, which I think is just above where you're talking about, but yeah, it's kind of a cool angle. You get to see, it's got a good view. We had a great time. I mean, and the people were, you know, obviously you jump into the section and you feel like the new people there because everybody knows each other, you know.
Exactly.
But, you're instantly welcomed, and there was sort of a section leader guy who was down front leading the charge, and, you know, he said, "I'm going to be the guy." We're like, "Okay, we're ready, let's go," you know. And we had a great time other than the result. It was cool to go see a Monday night game. It had a lot of atmosphere, and that part was fun. And we'll get back again, I think. The steeplechase trainer, Carrie Bryan, she's got some season tickets over that way somewhere too. So she's another one to keep in mind. Again, I think they go way back with her family, which is kind of cool.
Well, that's one of the things, you know, Giant fans and Eagle fans and a lot of stadiums in the NFL. You know, these are literally passed down, you know, from generation to generation. That the section that we like is M7. M7, the Southwest Terrace is what it's called. I just pulled up the
map.
And it is actually the corner of the end zone, but it is just terrific. The tunnel is, you know, the players come out underneath you, and a really friendly. It's only like three rows. That's what's cool about it. And we've sat there maybe three times over the last 4 years, and we're not going to see a game this year. It doesn't look like, because the schedule has been so fucked and crazy with these night games, and you know, I couldn't go Thanksgiving Sunday the other day. You know, Monday night games aren't practical because she's got school. I thought I'd see him on the road maybe. None of those dates worked. It's crazy. So we're gonna get shut out this year. It's gonna be the first time in probably 10 years. Usually they're home for that Pennsylvania Derby day. And so that became a tradition, you know, for like 4 years in a row. But it didn't work this year. Wasn't happy.
Yeah, we lucked into ours. It was kind of, I mean, just lucked into timing wise. Cause I have the same problem with a lot of these things. I have great intentions to go to various sporting events in my world, and they just get, it doesn't fit the calendar as you know, more often than not. So
yeah.
you don't get to them. They had a big five doubleheader at the Palestra last night. And I remember saying a few weeks ago, I need to go to that. That'll be great. And you know, nah, it didn't work. So, you know, that's the way it goes.
Well, you're Blue Hen? Are you a Delaware guy?
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
And they're in the playoffs, but I don't think I'm going to South Dakota, and we were out of town for Thanksgiving, or I would have gone to the playoff game the other day.
Huh. Well, I'm not as a Colgate alum, I guess I've got to invoke who? Tubby Raymond.
There you go.
How about that?
One of the scariest interviews of my life was when I was sent to Tubby Raymond's office to talk to him about the incoming recruiting class. And I was warned to not be late, and I got there, you know, early. and got screamed at because I was 3 hours early, but I actually wasn't, because when I came back 3 hours later, he apologized and said his calendar was messed up. But it was pretty tense there for a while.
That's pretty funny. Wasn't Tubby Raymond's son the Philly Fanatic?
Yes. Yep. Dave Raymond was the original Philly Fanatic, and actually now sort of runs a mascot company where they design and train and, you know, help teams come up with iconic mascots. None of them are as good as the Philly Fanatic, but that's what he does. And yeah, he's still around the area too. And he is no longer the actual Philly Fanatic on the field, but is sort of the man behind the Philly Fanatic.
Again, like we say very frequently, information you can't get anywhere else.
Exactly.
I mean, how I remember that Tubby Raymond's son was the Philly Fanatic. This comes from baseball cards as a kid, and in fact, all of us, I think, that love racing and love the, you know, the past performances, it all stems from basically memorizing, you know, all 660 cards in you know, the top series year after year.
That's for sure. With the little, they had the little cartoons, some of them.
Oh, the greatest, well. The greatest.
Back there, yeah. Sure. I have a few boxes around here, you know. I have divided them up and handed them to the boys, but there's plenty of cardboard boxes around here with some baseball cards in them still.
Well, we're Joe and I are so old that we both can recall when you couldn't get the entire series of baseball cards in one fell swoop. You literally had to wait like 6 weeks at a time for the series to be released, and you right, and you'd have to go to the five and dime, you know, or go to the we had a little shop called Fairway. And, you know, you would count down the days, or your friend would call you and say, the series two is out, and you'd run.
They're here.
Yeah. And you would take off, you know, you'd have $6. So you could maybe buy 14 packs, and you know, then you'd start to assemble them and put them in numerical order and check off the checklist. I mean, it was sick. It's just insane, the minutia involved in collecting baseball cards when we were kids. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, now people can just walk in and buy the whole long box, right?
Yeah, it's not, and that takes all the charm. I'll tell you one thing that wasn't charming is the year that I ended up with literally 14 Wilbur Woods.
Ed Watt was my nemesis.
Ed Watt.
I had a whole lot of Ed Watt cards, and I'm like, I don't want any more Ed Watt cards.
I'm telling you, I must have had 14 Wilbur Woods, and that was actually a resource, because the ones you would take to school for flipping and you know, for scrounging and for, you know, contests, you would take all your duplicates, and those were the ones you used to flip. Do kids still do it? Do kids still flip cards?
I don't know. As far as mine are now all in their 20s, so no, they don't. But I don't know if that still happens. Probably not, because they're too worried about scratching them up, or, you know, whatever.
Well,
you put them in a case or something. You know?
Exactly. Oh my God, how we got on this? There's no telling, but. It's actually a fun topic. Tony Black is next, and I can go pull out my Tony Black jockey trading card. I've got a couple of those. The jockey trading cards. When you buy them at a sports collector's show, don't eat the gum. The gum is the gum from the mid 90s.
The gum is not collectible.
Not anymore. Unbelievable. Well, Joe, great talking to you.
Horses? What are horses?
No, catch us up. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Because we're doing a lot of book selling today, Rich Ang later for his new edition of Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. How about the This Is Horse Racing Saratoga Special calendar for 2023? How do people order their calendar for this year, next year?
They're on our website, thisishorseracing.com, and if you want to go directly there, you add a little slash shop afterwards, but it's pretty obvious on the main homepage too where to get them. And it's the calendar goes all the way back to the 80s. We haven't been doing it quite that long, but it's just what it says. It's a, you know, full color wall calendar, big enough squares to write your, at least some of your appointments and upcoming trips to the track on. And I do not have them in my hand, but they're on the way from the printer here any day, the printer tells me. But in today's world, I'm not 100% sure what that means, but I should have them next week, and we'll be packing and shipping here as fast as we can do it. So they're online. They're $27 each, free shipping. Price goes down if you order more than one. So and everybody, you can, hopefully everybody's favorite horse is in there, but there's plenty of the stars that you can probably guess are in there, and some cool shots obviously from the season.
Maybe hint at a horse or two that is on the calendar this year.
My favorite photo is the cover. It's Flightline, and it's obviously, and it's sort of a non-racing kind of portrait, sort of headshot that just sort of strikes of his presence, which I think is fun, and it definitely makes you stop and look at him. That's for sure. Which we didn't get enough of him for sure, and we understand, but it's a great shot, and you know, just kind of a cool way to look back at a good year. And the rest of them, obviously, the, you know, Malathot is there, and where am I? I'm trying to pull it up so I can at least be, so I can run through and talk with some. Again, my favorite is still the cover, which is Flightline, not in racing action. Obviously, we've got a racing action shot of him in there as well, and Jackie's Warrior for sure, and the Regal Glory and Life Is Good, Rich Strike from the Derby. Nest obviously makes it. It was cool when you look back at it. It kind of makes you go back and look at the year sort of one by one. There's some cool stuff of Epicenter from Saratoga. No real repeats. Occasionally we'll go with, if a horse jumps out of it, they'll get a couple months. But I think the fun is also the variety in it. So
nice.
We go pretty deep with some different horses. Olympiad makes it, and Cody's Wish.
Nice.
But yeah, it's cool. The variety is the fun part to me, as you go back and look and just sort of follow along.
I should bring up one other topic with you as well, which is the discussion. Did I have it with you or with Tom? I think I had it with Tom about the inclusion. And it's funny because I got a very interesting communique from Leslie Young, and it the question is about getting Adiyamu in the body of the considerations, like in the catalog of the the booklet of PPs, and getting him considered as an Eclipse finalist. And I was that with you that I did that, or Tom?
It must have been Tom. It was not me.
Well, Leslie either heard the segment or heard about the segment, and she wrote to me and said she feels the same way, and I don't buy the disqualification that he's a timber horse. To me that's bizarre. Why wouldn't he be considered?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly he can be considered just like all Eclipse Awards. There's no limit, right?
Right.
You can vote for anybody you want in any, as long as they fit the category of the division, and he would fit the category as a steeplechase horse. A Timber horse has never won an Eclipse Award, or been named champion even going back to the 30s. It would take a superior year. I mean, he had a superior year for sure, but to me it would also take kind of a really subpar year for the hurdle horses. You know, I just think that they're it's very hard to compare. Obviously, it's apples and oranges. I mean, it's even more so than a sprinter versus a classic distance horse in flat racing, in the way I would look at it.
I mean,
there's been some really good Timber horses over the years. There was a horse a few years ago, Saluter, and I'd have to go back. I wonder if he got any votes. I don't know. That was a long time ago. And you know, he went, you know, I think he lost once on the year, you know, and sort of set an earnings record for Timber horses. And it's an interesting concept. I think all discussion in horse racing is fun. That's why we're here. But again, I would find it really hard to compare. I would think, in you know, it's so different. You know, you're talking about a 3 mile and up race horse specialist, and you know, to take, he's obviously a horse like Andy Amu is really good at it. You know, and you know, but is he as good a horse as some of the top hurdle horses? I don't know. You know, I mean, probably not over hurdles, but then they wouldn't be as good as he is over Timber. So it's a mental wrestling match, I think. But you know, again, it has never happened, and it's, you know, it probably did come up with Saluter just because he had such a good year that year, which would have been I don't know which one was his best, because he was champion Timber horse several times. It would have been mid-90s, I guess. I think he went 6 for 7. Again, it's horse racing. It's the discussion is the fun part of it. And obviously any trainer is going to be proud of their horse and want their horse to get considered. And, you know, the Eclipse Awards, as we know, is an open ballot. You can vote for anybody you want, you know. So
yeah,
you know, the Timber horses don't quite get the exposure of the hurdle horses in terms of a lot of the voters, because they don't see it as much. But nothing would stop anybody from voting for them, and you know, it wouldn't surprise me if you got a vote or two.
Well, good, because I'm going to vote for him. Well, because it's a very strange year. I mean, we certainly, the way Snap Decision tailed off, it's hard to anoint him. And I guess Hewick is certainly a great story, and the, you know, the subsequent adventures of Hewick going into pubs and stuff. only is going to enhance his candidacy. So,
yeah, I'm the guy who never vote for the one start foreign horse,
right?
In any category, I just don't buy it. I mean, if an American horse went over there and won the Cheltenham Gold Cup, they wouldn't anoint him the champion steeplechaser of England, you know, or if he did the same in a major race in Ireland, you know. The Snap Decision year, we only have 5 grade one hurdle races. He won 2, you know, nobody else won 2. It is the way he sort of loses his last 2. So it sort of loses some of the impact. And we're very, where we saw the Mean Queen kind of win it last year by winning the last 2.
That's right.
You know?
So that's right.
It is a tricky year. You always want it to be more clear. But again, it's kind of what you got. And I'm sure there's some flat divisions that are going to have, I find myself wrestling with Eclipse votes every year, trying to make the right call and a call that sort of rewards the right horse.
Well, that is in the offing, part of the year end conversations and activities. So we'll, we'll look to that. And Joe, otherwise, let's see. Let me look at the calendar. Who's coming out? I'm guessing, is Law coming out to Arizona?
I think we're all staying put, actually.
Okay.
He was on the road, you know, almost for 2 months toward the end of the year there between Keeneland, Breeders' Cup, Claiming Crown, et cetera. And I'll be here trying to make sure calendars get in envelopes and out the door and trying to land the Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred plane for, what are we looking at, January's edition. And so, yeah, I don't think we're going to make it. So I would love to get there. I think it's every year when it's about in the middle of it, I'm like, man, I should be there, you know, but reality sets in sometimes.
All right. Well, so next Thursday I'll be at Los Al, actually. And
cool.
I'm just looking at the calendar. I guess we do have three full Thursdays yet to go. So we may talk to you one more time before the year closes out.
Cool.
All right. Joe Clancy, everybody. Joe Clancy, 65, as part of the three-headed monster we know as the Saratoga Special. This is horseracing.com with Tom Law, Saratoga TL, and Sean Clancy, the wee Clancy. Does he go by the wee Clancy?
No, I don't think we call him that.
No, he's never been called the wee Clancy.
No, maybe by a relative, you know. An Irish relative probably has used that term for all of us at some point.
I think it's good, actually. In fact, he should change his Twitter handle to Wee Clancy. The Wee Clancy. Well, this was a classic, Joe.
Definitely. Always talking about a little bit of everything.
That's what we do around here, Joe Clancy. Everybody, Joe, thank you.
I'll talk to you before
Christmas. There it is. And of course, we have to talk the Christmas tree, the Christmas tree story. There's the Christmas story itself that you're going to be watching 7,000 times on TBS. But then there's the Sean Clancy, the wee Clancy Christmas tree story you can look forward to, because it's sort of it's become a Christmas tradition now. On At the Races. So when we get a chance to talk to Sean, we will relive the odyssey of the Christmas, of the Clancy Christmas tree. Tony Black standing by. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. What a show you're putting on this morning. I'm really enjoying it, even though I tuned in a little late. And you were speaking of books.
Yeah.
And it made me go to my office and get this book that I have. And I'll read you the inscription before I tell you who it's by or who it's about and who it's by. It's to Tony Black. All the very best for a great friend and a damn good writer. I miss seeing you and having some fun like the good old days. And it's signed. Best of luck for you, Jack Vanberg.
There you go.
From Grit to Glory by Chris Kudelak. And I think the reason he sent me this book, I think I made contact with him. If I remember correctly, this is quite a few years ago. I think you had him on the show.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was on on hold or on the show, and he wanted my number, he called me after the show, and he said, "Listen, Black." He says, like you said in the book, I miss seeing you, and you haven't written for me in a long time. And he said, "But I'm going to send you something—the book that's about me." I said, "Yeah, Grit to Glory." I heard about it, and he sent it to me, and has the inscription on the inside that he signed. And I thought, what a guy! I missed it. You know what? When you talk about the good old days and the people that we rubbed elbows with over the years, you know, you think about guys like Jack Vanberg and so many of these older guys that I rode for, or they were somewhat of my teachers and mentors. You know, guys that come to hand even in the Philadelphia Park Keystone area, like Marty Fallon, Walter Reese, guys like that. They were always there you know, when I was riding. And I'll never forget Bob K. Mack and Walter Reese when I got sober in December 15th, 1990. There was people walking around saying, oh, as soon as he gets to doing good again, he'll be screwing up. He'll be screwing up when he gets to doing good. And I went to Bob K. Mack and Walter Reese, and I says, guys, I'm serious. I want to get back in the game seriously, try to win some races and extend my career. And instead of those guys saying, oh, as soon as he does good again, he'll be screwing up, he says, just come over, get on some horses for us. K. Mack picked one out. He says, get on this horse. Just get on this horse when she runs first time out. You know, I really like her. I think we can win first time out. And I got on her. He put her in, put me on her, finished second first time out and win her next start. And her name was Tout Le Monde. I forget the filly's name. I got it written someplace. But it was my first winner back after a little bit of a screw period of downtime.
Yeah.
You know. But Jack Vanberg, when you were talking about books, I had to run and get this book because it, you know, and Jack, if you're listening from above, I still haven't read it, but I've looked at all the pictures in it.
Well, and of course, still available. And Chris Katulak from Fonner Park, you know, Chris worked on it and put it together with Jack, and he had that fabulous tour. Where, you know, he basically traversed the country, and it gave him a chance really to reconnect with so many people, Tony. And, you know, then even in a manner like you were able to reconnect with him. It was really good for Jack too. I mean, his health was declining and at the same time, but really, it was really nice. And if anybody hasn't read Grit to Glory, it's quite terrific, and I'll get Chris Katulak to visit actually, because there's some exciting things ahead for Nebraska Racing, and Chris will give everybody access to if they haven't ordered the book, he'll tell you how. I got to mention, Tony, too. You talk about that period and coming back from some dark times, and you actually had a TikTok that was published by Chris Griffin the other day, where you talked about, you know, second chances, essentially. It was, you know, Giving Tuesday was appropriate, and that got a very nice reception.
Yeah, you know what? I'm very grateful to the people that gave me a second chance, and nobody had to. But there was people that you think about, and you know, and I, in my office, I have pictures of these people, these trainers, and some of these owners. And I says, man, these pictures will never get put away, because they were the people when I came back that said, well, you know what? Like the one guy said, man, I really screwed up. I really screwed up, Walter. He says, maybe you won't this time. Maybe you won't this time. That was the way they left you. And it was amazing when they embraced you and they gave you a chance to have another 20-year career after. My first 20-year career started out quick. Win my first 5 out of 8 races, won my first race, right? At the end of it, it was kind of started out quick, and in the end was probably lacking much respect or self-respect. My second 20-year career started out a little slower, but ended in self-respect and respect of I think, by many people in the business. And I had the opportunity to be around kids starting out while I was starting my second 20-year career that used me as a mentor. And the one thing I used to tell them, man, watch me ride, or, you know, ask me questions about riding. But if you have some questions about personal life and addictions, ask me those questions too. Because you know what? It wasn't like I was the only one that went through it. There's many of riders, many of people in this sport that have gone through, and some not survived, and some survived.
Yep.
You know, I got a list of guys I can think of. I'm not going to start naming anybody, but at the period of time that I was on the downhill slide, so were they. And some of them got straight and some of them didn't. And guess what? A whole bunch of them ain't here today.
Yeah.
And they weren't. I'm 71, and they didn't make it to 60, 55, 60, some of them. But, you know, I'm very grateful for the second 20-year career that I had.
Tony, I got to ask you, because I don't know if you heard yesterday, I had Kate DeMasi in hour three, had a wonderful conversation with Kate, and a name came up that triggered a bunch of people. Rick Hammerly actually called me the minute the show was over, and he, from his time at Monmouth, Arnaldo Unsue.
Yeah, Arnaldo Unsue from, was it from Uruguay or... I forget. Yeah, I wrote a lot with Arnaldo. You know, Kate DeMasi's, when you were talking about John Parada and he was talking about the expenses of horses and everything, and well, and it is. It's a tremendous expense to have racehorses or brood mares or anything. Has to do with the horse business. But I was thinking of Kate. Her name came into my mind because there is a way of getting into the business where it's, you know, it's not going to be profitable, but or it's not going to cost you a lot of money. It's going to get your feet. You're going to get your feet wet. She, I don't know if she's still doing it, but she has those limited partnerships. And, you know, it's a nominal fee in the beginning. You don't have a monthly expense. You don't have, you probably never make nothing either, but you get a chance to have an owner's license and limited partnerships. You can, you learn your way around the racetracks, the backsides, you meet the people, and then you can make a decision. And it didn't cost you $1 zillion to learn about the business. And it didn't cost you $1 zillion to learn about the business to see if you want to really get in, you know, but, I can remember the old days, you know, there was a lot of people in the business and it was a lot cheaper. When I came around, it was $16 a day. Charlie Coco used to charge people $16 a day to train their horses, you know, $16
amazing.
A day.
Amazing.
But that was in the mid-60s, you know, 16. And then we went up to $18. I hope they can absorb this expense. You know? $18. Now it's 110, 120, you know, and you had a lot of these, you know, little breeders come about because they either had some farms and they raced the horse and they said, oh, well, I'm done racing this horse, but I'll breed her. Well, I had a friend of mine and a really good, well, he was a owner turned trainer, was Bob Bell. And he had a little horse called Friend's Choice. And I rode Friend's Choice. Well, Friend's Choice was, when he retired him, he says, I'm going to stand this old horse. I'm going to stand him on my farm in Davisville, Maryland. You know, well, Friend's Choice, Even gave me a couple babies by Friend's Choice. It did okay, but when my wife was training. But he trained, he bred a horse called Dave's Friend by Friend's Choice.
Of course.
Dave's Friend was an Eclipse Award sprinter.
A terrific
and,
sprinter.
You know, and he was just a good old guy, Bob Bell. Good old guy, and his business was restaurant business. And I used to go sit in his restaurant, the Fireside Restaurant. He had Lido's, a pizza shop, but the Fireside Restaurant, because he always had beautiful waitresses working for him. And I was just a young guy, you know. And I'd say, hey, Bob, what's the story on this one? Hey, Bob, you think she'll go out with me? But it was funny. Friend's Choice was his little horse that he raced to the end of his career, which he wasn't too old. I don't know, 5-6 years old. I even rode him. And then he stood him. And I'll never forget one day, Dave's Friend, he named me on him at Keystone, I guess it was, so, Philadelphia Park. And Jimbo Bracali was his regular rider. Well, Jimbo's horse scratched in New York that he was supposed to ride for one of the Campos or something. And he said, geez, he says, Jimbo couldn't come, but he can come today. I said, that's all right, you know, because I picked up an open mountain mistake. I said, that's all right, Bob, you know, don't worry about it. And I'll ride the race anyway. And there was some horse that was open I picked up. So we wind up running the race. He beats me in nose. I rode a horse called Cheating Arthur. Dave's Friend beats me in nose. Bracali just beat me. And then Bracali, I was best man at his wedding, and we lived together for a while. And I thought, this son done beat me. I got taken off the horse, and now I picked up a horse, and you beat me in nose. Don't you know, Bob Bell, when I get a call a couple of days later, he said, did you pick your check up? I says, what check? He says, I paid Bracali, and I paid you for that stake. He says, I felt bad taking you off last minute. He says, well, I made more money than Bracali because I got second money and a winning purse. But that's the kind of guy Bob Bell was. You know, he was just a class guy, great businessman. And he and then he let me ride Dave's friend a few times after, and I won on him when Jimbo broke his arm. But it's funny how the breeding business, and how sometimes these little, you know, breeders that were just owners, and they raced a mare or they raced a stallion, and then they bred them, and they could afford to do that. But a guy was very well to do anyway. But he was in it for his accomplishments, not for the money. He wanted to, and he wound up breeding Dave Friend's Choice, and got Dave's Friend and a Champion Eclipse Award winner.
Well, regarding Arnaldo Unsue, I just heard from Sheldon Glass. Sheldon said he was his agent. Unbelievable. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too funny.
It's amazing how all these names pop up. I went to the hospital the other day to get a x-ray of my shoulder because I got a plate in it, right? I walk into the waiting room with radiology, the waiting room, and here's a guy sitting there. He says, Tony Black. And I looked. You know who it was? It was Gerald Delp. Buddy Delp's brother, Bud Delp's brother, Gerald Delp. He was an agent. In fact, he even had my book one time for a very short period of time. But he said, hey, how's Rod Madrigal? Rod was his rider at the time, for a long time, Rod Madrigal. And I thought, yeah, Rod. Now Rod's got a food business in North or South Carolina. And I thought, what a great business for Rod, because he used to love cooking and eating and heaving. And that's how he was, you know, the guy's 5'8", 5'9", and he looked, he wasn't built to be a jockey, and he did his weight, and that's the only way he kept his weight down. But he wound up getting a food truck, and he has a very successful business in, I think it's South Carolina.
How about that?
I gotta call him. Maybe North Carolina, I don't know. Oh, the Carolinas, that's all the same to me. But here I get my shoulder x-rayed, and here I run into an agent, Gerald Delp. And I thought, man, small world. And it's a hospital, St. Mary's Hospital. You know, it's like 30 miles from my house. You wouldn't think you're going to run into to an old agent in a hospital waiting room.
They're out there. Tony, yeah. Let me pull up, and we'll catch up with you next week. But good to talk, and you know, thanks for that. That message you sent out was really nice. And every time you talk about you talk about coming back from you know, a dark period, it helps somebody. So well done.
What else can you do that's any more beneficial than that to help somebody that's going through a dark period? I'm always here and available to talk to them. It can be done, you know. So it's not easy, but it can be done. I'm living proof of it.
There you go. Absolutely.
You take care, and thanks for all the good work you do. Really appreciate it, and so does horse racing. Love you, brother.
Love you too, Tony. Tony Black, everybody, the one and only, always great. We're going to stay here, and Sheldon, following up, says that Arnaldo Unsue, for those wondering, he lives in Louisiana, and actually he rode, looking at his stats, I mean, he rode to 2009. So it's funny how, you know, certain names that you didn't necessarily, he had one graded stake win in his career, and won the Betsy Ross, actually. And just was looking at, you know, and won a lot of races. It's amazing. You know, guys, you just don't, you know, if you weren't following a certain circuit at the time, you know, the chances are you don't necessarily have a strong memory or the name that, you know, really never, you know, registered with you. So thanks to Tony, as always. Dave Hill's going to join us next. Rich Eng as well this morning. And we'll do the week 13 action with Dave Hill as well. And Dave joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
I couldn't tell. I guess I saw, when I looked in the paper this morning, that you declared yourself